Andrew Tate has become one of the most influential and controversial figures on the internet. To his supporters, he's a champion of free speech and traditional masculinity. To his critics, he's a dangerous misogynist who has helped normalize extreme attitudes towards women. A major new investigation in The New Yorker examines the world of Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan, their online empire, the criminal allegations they face, and the extraordinary network of political, media, and online influence that has grown around them. The reporting also raises broader questions about the power of social media, the rise of the so-called manosphere, and the impact that these figures are having on boys and young men all around the world. I'm joined now by the journalist behind that investigation, Heidi Blake. Heidi, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
First of all, what prompted your investigation?
Well, I was fascinated by the vast influence that the Tate brothers have been able to command over the past few years, but also by the case against them in Romania and also in the UK. They are subject to very serious allegations of human trafficking and rape, both of them, and have been indicted in Romania on those charges. But since the election of Donald Trump, have managed to get themselves freed from the bail measures that they were being held under in Romania and are now traveling freely around the world. Romanian prosecutors succumbed to pressure from the US and released them from their travel ban. And since then, the brothers have been saying that they are totally innocent, that the case against them is a political smear campaign, and that is all going to crumble and fall away and they will not face any consequences. And that narrative was beginning to gain quite a lot of traction. And so I really wanted to get behind it and find out what was the evidence against the brothers, what was the case against them built on, and to really understand how they built the vast fortune that has allowed them to build this enormous following on social media. That's kind of how I got started.
Now, your investigation draws on thousands of messages and on court documents and interviews. And it would seem, on the face of what you have discovered, game, set and match. And yet these guys walked.
It is extraordinary to me that, you know, that the volume of evidence that does indicate that these two men systematically exploited women over a long period of time in building an online pornography empire, which is really the root of their fortune. There's a huge amount of evidence, as you say, in the form of text messages and internal documents and records. And also, you know, I went and spoke to a number of these women who worked for them and heard harrowing stories of how they were subjugated by the Tates, how they were compelled to make pornography and subjected in some cases to harrowing violence and abuse. And yet the brothers have managed to get themselves freed from restriction and are traveling freely around the world. Now, the case against them in Romania is still pending and prosecutors have actually only in the last few days since the article was published have expanded that investigation. So it's not over. But right now, the brothers are free to travel, are continuing to spread their message, are continuing to amass greater wealth, greater influence. And so I think there are real questions about whether they're going to face justice.
Now, you have tracked down some of the women that were involved in this, and it appears that the Tate brothers had a standard technique, if you like, to get these women enthralled with them.
That's right. The method that the brothers used over many years really closely resembles what trafficking experts call the loverboy method, which is basically to approach these women, to make romantic overtures to them, to bombard them with flattery and affection and romance them. And then once they've managed to get these women into a sort of romantic relationship, to press them into giving up their own work, giving up their connections with friends and family, isolating them and eventually pushing them into sex work. And this is something that the brothers did over and over again. In private messages, Andrew Tate described his methods to associates. He would share screenshots of the messages he was sending to these various women and report on their recruitment. And he said that he'd done this to more than 100 women. He described himself as a shepherd leading the sheep. And he also recruited a team of enforcers who worked for him, and he told them to keep the farm animals on task. That was the way that he referred to the women that he recruited in this way.
Now, he was there at the very birth, I suppose, of web porn, where I suppose ordinary people could stream stuff from, whether it's a basement, a bedroom, a hotel room, whatever it is, and basically sell it online for cash.
That's right. Yeah. But at the time that he started out in 2014, webcam porn, which is now a multi-billion dollar industry, was really just getting started. And he viewed himself as a kind of pioneer. He figured out that this was a very low investment way to start making money. You know, he considered starting a strip club or something like that, but the upfront investment was just too much. Whereas with webcam porn, all you need is a webcam and, you know, a space in which to broadcast and a woman who is going to go on camera for you. And Andrew Tate, that's how he started. He put a girlfriend of his, who at the time was only 17 years old, on camera in 2014 and quickly started making huge amounts of money from her performances and in his own telling, keeping all of the money that she made. It's actually illegal in the US and the UK and many countries to make sexual images of somebody under 18. But what Tate did was create a profile in which this woman was presented as being a Russian woman in her 20s. And she worked for him for many years. And according to Tate, in private messages that I obtained, made him $2 million. But he said that she didn't get to see hardly any of that money. He just gave her pocket money for coffee and manicures and kept the rest and then went on to recruit dozens and dozens of other women who were exploited in a similar way.
People might find it hard to understand how these women actually continued to put up with it. I mean, they saw what happened to themselves, then new arrivals came and more were added to, if you like, the string of performers he had on the web. Were there no rebellions?
There were some rebellions. And, it is hard, I think, from the outside to understand how women came to be so bamboozled by the Tates. But I think it was an education for me to read screeds and screeds of messages in which these women were gradually lured in. And you could see the way that they were constantly kept off balance with this kind of shifting technique of warmth and affection and kindness and then cruelty and abuse and this kind of constant shifting of modes was very confusing. And many of these women had come from backgrounds where they had suffered abuse in the past, where they had come from poverty and suddenly were living in this world where Andrew Tate could shower them when he wanted to with great largesse and then at other times be very withholding and very cruel. He was also very deliberate about the methods of controlling these women. So once they entered his orbit, he would systematically isolate them from their friends, from their families. They would be banned from leaving the properties where he kept them unattended. So these women quickly became disorientated, isolated, and kind of worn down by this constant bombardment. But there were some women who tried to get away, and the brothers had techniques for dealing with them. That one of the things that they consistently did was to hack into the social media accounts of anyone who tried to get away and post pornography to their regular friends and supporters, so outing them as sex workers. They would also make sure that they controlled all of the accounts that these women used, so there was no way for them to continue earning an income if they left. Women were also were threatened with all sorts of repercussions if they tried to get away. And so for many women, it was, it didn't feel possible to leave. But there certainly were some who left. And I spoke to women who'd spent years since then in therapy, recovering from the abuse they suffered during the years in which they worked for the Tates.
Now, one American woman who was lured to Romania by Tristan Tate was instrumental in a raid on their little village, which resulted in the charges, their arrest. But I suppose that didn't stick.
Well, yes, there was a young woman from Miami who Tristan Tate had met and kind of romanced on a trip there himself. She arrived at the compound in April of 2022 and ostensibly thought she was going there to teach Tristan piano. She's a young musician. But when she got there, quickly came to believe that the women in the house where she was placed were being trafficked. She felt that they were all brainwashed. They seemed to be frightened. And she felt that, that an attempt was being made to traffic her into sex work. And so she raised the alarm. She texted family members and a family friend who alerted the US embassy and a raid team was sent to extract her and other women who worked in the property. And that was what triggered the Romanian investigation. The prosecutors then began probing the Tate's affairs and identified dozens of other women who had been recruited in a similar way and built a case against the Tates in which they were accused of forming an organized crime group to systematically traffic women. That case is still pending in Romania. They are still being investigated on those charges, but they have managed to stall the case to such an extent that they are now traveling freely around the world. They are saying that they're totally innocent and the case is going to come to nothing.
Everything took a turn in their favor when Trump came to power. Why was that so important to their current freedom?
That's right. I mean, Andrew Tate has really become a defining voice for masculinism, this kind of creed which is all about rolling back the gains of feminism and reasserting patriarchal power, which has become a uniting force in Donald Trump's circles in the MAGA movement in the US. And Tate was instrumental in mobilizing a huge number of young men to vote for Trump in the 2024 election. And, you know, he has leveraged that to his advantage. So in the months following the election, he declared pretty openly that Trump is the president and we will now be freed. And US officials made clear their displeasure at the way that Romania was handling the case against the Tates. Eventually under mounting pressure from the US, Romanian prosecutors did decide to release the Tate brothers from that travel ban. And since then they have been traveling freely around. They flew straight to the US. They were greeted as free speech martyrs and heroes in conservative circles as they toured the country, being kind of feted wherever they went, and they continue to kind of benefit from those connections. They've been publicly defended by Elon Musk, by Donald Trump Jr., by, you know, hugely influential conservative figures like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, and so those political connections have been really instrumental in getting them to the position they're now in, where the case against them appears to be stalled. And they seem pretty confident that they are going to face no action whatsoever. But I do think that, now that so much of this information about their activities is in the public domain, I think it will be interesting to see what Romanian prosecutors do next.
How pernicious has their influence been on young men all around the world?
It's really hard to overstate the scale of their influence. You know, Andrew Tate devised a very ingenious mechanism for spreading his content to billions and billions of fans around the world. He kind of devised this content factory model whereby he enrolled hundreds of thousands of students in an online school where there was an affiliate marketing program in which they could earn commissions by reposting his content. And after he did that, his videos have been viewed more than 12 billion times, in a single summer, the summer after he launched that program, and have spread that content to millions and millions of homes and classrooms all around the world. And, you know, there are really disturbing reports of violent misogyny spreading through communities of young men in the UK and around the world. I mean, police in Britain have declared a national emergency over the upsurge in violence against women, and they have specifically cited Andrew Tate as a driving factor in that. They've said that Tate is radicalizing young men in what police chiefs have described as a terrifying manner, and education leaders have described violent misogyny spreading through classrooms on what they call an epidemic scale. So this is very serious. There have been similar reports in North America, across Asia, in Australia and New Zealand, all around the world. I think that's why this story is really important, because this is not just about the abuses that the Tate brothers themselves have committed, but about their vast influence on very impressionable young men all around the world today.
And you report about how Hadley, that young American woman who blew the whistle on them and caused that raid in Bucharest, how she had the tables turned on her by a lawyer representing the Tates, who in turn had represented some of the insurrectionists of January the 6th. And Hadley ends up being persecuted effectively by that side.
That's right. Yeah, the Tates, after they were indicted in Romania, hired a very expensive team of lawyers, PR advisors, political advisors, private detectives to go after this young woman who they really blame for the entire case against them. They sent private detectives and other influencers to dig into her past and to try and find information that could be used to discredit her. And they launched a very aggressive campaign against her through the Florida courts, in which they and other people close to them have sued her, her parents, the family friend she texted. You have to bear in mind, all this young woman has done is text her family and a friend to tell them that she felt that she was in danger. Her family then alerted the embassy, and the embassy then alerted the police. She's never spoken to the media. She's never said anything publicly against them. But on the basis that she simply spoke to law enforcement about them, they are suing her for defamation, and members of her family as well. While, through a network of their affiliates, this information that their private detectives have dug up about her, including very private information about how she was sexually abused and raped as a teenager, for example, is being spread online by their followers. She's been forced into hiding. She said her life has been made into a living nightmare. And so that's the situation she faces simply for speaking to law enforcement. Meanwhile, they are traveling freely around the world.
Do you think they'll end up behind bars?
I think it's very hard to say in the current political climate. They are wanted in the UK for rape and human trafficking charges, 21 counts of rape and human trafficking against the two of them. And they face extradition to the UK, but the Romanian courts have ruled that they can't be extradited until the Romanian case runs its course. And so in messages that I obtained, the brothers commented to their own team that they were effectively being protected by Romania, because all the while the case there remains stalled, they can't be extradited to the UK, where they face these very, very serious charges. And so it really remains to be seen how that Romanian case is going to play out. It's essential for that case to move forward for the brothers to face any kind of repercussions. And so I think it's really incumbent on Romanian prosecutors to figure out what their next move is going to be at this point.
And they believe, top to bottom, between political figures and police, that they have Romania bought and sold. That's what they believe.
They've very publicly said for a long time before they were indicted that they were above the law in Romania, that they had connections all the way to the very top of Romanian society, and that they felt that they had total impunity. Clearly, they overreached somewhat in bringing this American citizen into their operation. And I think the intervention by the US embassy made it pretty difficult for Romanian prosecutors to do anything but take action. But obviously the change of administration in the US has caused something of a change of direction in the way that case is being handled. And so it's going to be really, really interesting to see now whether Romanian prosecutors do choose to move forward with that case. The brothers said to me that they retain very high-placed connections in Romania who have been very apologetic to them about the case against them. And they said to me that, after Trump's election, and after the intervention by various US officials, that they were told that there was sort of too much heat on Romania coming from the US, and that was why they were ultimately freed from their travel ban. So, the sort of political dimensions of this case do seem to be playing a big role in what is actually going to happen at the sort of prosecutorial and judicial level. And I think, it's all eyes on Bucharest. And we'll have to see what prosecutors there do next.